I invite you to open your Bibles to the book of James. In James chapter 4 and verse 14, whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. We are continuing in our study on the book of James. James is a very practical book. We're looking at practical, everyday Christianity, how to take the things that are in the Bible and apply them into our life. We've looked at different things with relating to that, temptations, being doers of the word, showing partiality. We talked about faith and works, instructions to teachers. Last week we talked about worldliness in the church, and this evening we're going to talk about judging and arrogance. So in verse 11, do not speak evil of one another, brethren. He who speaks evil of a brother judges his brother, speaks evil of the law, and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge. Have we ever heard anybody speak evil of a brother? If we've been around any time at all, unfortunately we have. It's not uncommon for someone to start talking about another person, and it usually, as the saying goes from bad to worse. There is one lawgiver who is able to save and to destroy. Who are you to judge another? Now, when he is talking about this, notice, do not speak evil of one another, brethren. Again, he is speaking to those that are members of the church. And he talks about the law, and we need to understand which law this is. He's not talking about the Old Testament law. He's talking about the law of Christ. He is talking about the gospel. When Jesus, on the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 1, Jesus said, judge not that you be not judged. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged, and with what measure you use, it will be measured back to you. Jesus is saying, don't judge your brother. Why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye and do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye and look at a plank in your own eye? Hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. There are some people, I would just call them fault finders. They go about trying to find faults in everybody that they come in contact with. You know, you shouldn't be doing that. You're doing this the wrong way. Why did you do that? They just nitpick people apart and look for faults in people. You could have done that better. And they're judging people. They're judging people in a negative way. Jesus says that this is wrong. Jesus says we need to look at ourselves first before we look at someone else. Before I tell you your life isn't right, I need to look at myself and see if my life is right. Again, the law here is referring to the law of Jesus, the law of the gospel. The law of the New Testament, the Christian law, James' word in this verse referred to the law of Christ in its entirety and to the specific instance of certain Christians having broken it by speaking against and judging one another. We read this and we say, yeah, I understand that. And then you see an illustration. And again, like I was saying this morning, I think the graphics help us to cement it in our mind. Hey, bub, you have a little something in your eye there. And we see where this man is trying to tell somebody else he's got something in his eye. And he's got a huge log in his eye. Why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? We're talking about judging. If you really fulfill the royal law according to the scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, you do well. James 2:8. So we want to love our brother. We'll look at what judging is and is not. But James is teaching that if you do not follow the law, you have thought that the law is nothing. Jesus gave this law to love one another. And if you aren't loving one another, then what does that say about the law that Jesus gave? You're saying it's worthless. And friends, that is not true. Jesus is teaching again that if you do not follow the law, you must have thought that it was worthless. What's the other side of that coin? When we understand what the law is, we must be doing the law. And that is one of the reasons why sometimes people judge someone else, is to get out of doing anything themselves. There's one lawgiver who's able to save and destroy. Who are you to judge another? Jesus, again, this goes back to the Sermon on the Mount. This is a sculpture of Jesus teaching the 12 apostles overlooking the Mount of Beatitudes. Speak not evil one of another. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judges his brother speaketh evil of the law and judges the law. But if thou judge the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. There's one lawgiver who is able to save and to destroy. Who are you that judges another? And as we've looked at before, one of the few verses that people will quote from the Bible is, judge not that ye be not judged. But that's talking about a certain kind of judgment. We are to judge. We are to make distinctions. We have to judge between good and evil, but we can't judge somebody's motives. We don't know the whole story. And again, why am I focusing on someone and neglecting to look at my own life? Have you ever been out driving around somewhere, headed somewhere, and you see a person or a group of people? And I do this. I'll tell Carol, I said, that person looks out of place here. I'm making a judgment. The way they're dressed, the way they're acting, they look out of place here. But there are things that we are to judge. And we've got to be careful with our brother. And we've got to be careful, especially, that we aren't judging him and neglecting to do what we know we need to do. To judge a brother in the sense here intended is to form unfavorable opinions, impute unworthy motives, or to put the worst possible interpretation on their words and actions. Sometimes, again, we'll see someone do something and we have no idea why they said that or did that. They might be having a bad day. They might have, whatever the reason is, we jump to conclusions and we talk about a brother, a sister. To speak evil of a brother is a sin against the brother and against the law. So even if we are making an opinion of them, we ought to talk to them. See, do you have something going on in your life you'd like to share? Something that's troubling you? When we judge, a lot of times we put ourselves in the place of Christ. I know what is best. I know what you're doing. I know what is right. I know what is wrong. I. And again, we take the focus off of ourselves and point towards someone else. And a lot of times, we need to be focusing on ourselves instead of that other person's. So to speak evil of a brother is a sin against the brother, against the law. Refusing to do what the law commands, to love one's neighbor as yourself. What if you don't like that person? We're to love them. We're to love everybody. just what if when Christ came to the earth, he said, I'm just going to die for the people that love me. He would have just died for a handful. But he came and died for all mankind. He set the example for us to love one another. Christ is our lawgiver and judge. When man legislates where God has not, it brings about division and it is rebellion against God. Throughout history, when men have enacted legislation apart from the law of Christ, it has resulted in man-made creeds, synods, councils, confessions of faith, church manuals, which add to and take away from the Word of God. So who are you to judge another? We are not to judge by appearance. John 7:24. What good is it to pronounce judgment on someone if you do not have the power to carry out the judgment? So stop and think about that. I'm making a judgment. So to remove it from people for a minute and talk about an inanimate object. Say you're working in a factory, you're working in a business, you're quality control, and you are responsible for looking at these widgets that are going down the assembly line and making a judgment, and you judge by appearance, this is a good one, that's a bad one. And then what's the next step? If you're working on those widgets and this is a good one, that's a bad one, you have to separate the bad ones from the good ones. But what if that's not your job? What if that's Joe's job and you're standing there telling Joe, hey, you need to get rid of this one. That one's okay. You're telling him what to do. We should not judge if we are not able to carry out the judgment. And again, we are usurping the authority, the power of God, the power of Christ, because we are sitting in the seat of judgment then, saying, you shouldn't do this, you should do this. So the law against judging would not forbid rebuking sin. 1 Timothy 5:19-20. We have to judge if there is sin or not. It would not forbid correcting one another. James 5:19-20. When we see someone that falls or stumbles or errs, we need to go to them and restore them. The law against judging would not forbid carefully restoring one who has fallen away. Galatians 6:1, 1 Timothy 5:1. We're to bear one another's burdens and consider one another. We're making judgments when we do that. But when we are considering that person that has fallen, why are we considering them? To restore them. We want to restore them back to the right position. Judging. In verse 13, we have come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we'll go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit. Whereas ye do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. When I was younger, I was really impressed by people that would talk about their business plans and what they're going to do. I'm going to go here. I'm going to do this. We're going to grow so fast. We're going to grow so big. We're going to add more. We're going to do this. And then time goes by. And a lot of times you see their plans did not materialize into what they were hoping that it would. Come now, you who say, we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit. But you don't know what will happen tomorrow. Verse 15, and said, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But if you boast in your arrogance, all such boasting is evil. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and to do it not is sin. You know, we we live in a society just like they did. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we're going to go here, we're going to spend a year, we're going to buy and sell, we're going to make a profit. We live in a society that tells us that we are masters of our destiny. Whatever you can conceive and believe, you can achieve. The sky is the limit. Don't let anybody tell you you can't do anything. We hear all of this talk all of the time. And what is left out of that? God is left out of that. Friends, it's good to have plans. Is there anything wrong with planning? There's nothing wrong with planning. When you plan, you get more done. When you plan, you can measure things. You can see if you're on track. When you plan, you have goals that you can accomplish. You get people headed in the right direction. But friends, when you plan and you don't include God in your plans, that's what James is talking about. That's when we are going to run into problems. You boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. You're boasting about what you're going to do, and you're leaving God out of it. You're going to get in this boat today or tomorrow. We'll go to this or that city, spend a year there, trade. We're going to do this, we're going to do that. And again, there's nothing wrong with the church having plans, but we must include God in those plans. We must pray for those plans. And when you take that verse and just break it down, it is pretty arrogant. Come now, today or tomorrow, we will go to such and such a city. We're going to spend a year there. We're going to buy, sell, and make a profit. And again, you go to work for just about any company, and they're going to drill this into you. You got to have plans. You got to have goals. You got to meet quotas. You got to sell more, more, more. But you think about the different characters in the Bible. Did they have plans? Sure, everybody had plans. We don't know what their plans were, but you think about Abraham. I'm sure when Abraham was growing up, he had plans, but what did God tell him? God told Abraham, I want you to leave your homeland. I want you to go to a place that I will show you. You don't know where you're going. I want you to leave your family idols behind. I want you to step out in faith. I want you to trust me. And, ways change over the years. Everything is about digital now. But 10, 20 years ago, a lot of people carried these day planners around. They had their life mapped out on a day planner. Everything was written down, what they were going to do. What was God telling Abraham? You take your day planner and throw it out the window, and you follow me. You follow me. You think about Joseph. When Joseph was growing up, I'm sure he had plans. He was in a big family. His father was rich. He had plans. But God had different plans for him. And Joseph was sold into slavery. He was put into prison. But you see the plans that God had for Joseph, where Joseph rose to the second highest position in Egypt, and he saved nations around about him from storing up grain during the 7 years of plenty, and he was reunited with his family that came down to get food. And you see so many promises that God had made fulfilled through Joseph. But was it Joseph's plans? Wasn't his plans? God has a bigger plan. God has a bigger plan. You think about Moses. Moses, growing up in the palace of Pharaoh in Egypt. Again, a very powerful, powerful position. He could have had anything that he wanted. He could have done anything. But what does the Hebrew writer say? It said he chose rather to suffer with his people than to enjoy the passing pleasure of sin. So again, Moses, he was up here in Egypt, and what does he do? He leaves and he spends the next 40 years with sheep. Nothing against sheep, but he spent the next 40 years with stinking sheep, going from the palace to being a shepherd. You think about Jeremiah, as we've been studying Jeremiah, a young man. And God tells Jeremiah that when he was about 17 years old, that you're going to be my mouthpiece. You're going to speak for me. And he tells Jeremiah, don't marry, don't have a family. The things that I'm going to tell you and the things that you're going to see are going to be so terrible. I don't want you to have anybody else in your life to worry about. And Jeremiah, he said, and God told Jeremiah, you're going to suffer so many things, but the one thing I'm going to guarantee you, you will not lose your life. They are not going to take your life away from you. You're going to see this and that happen. You're going to see the people carried away, the destruction of Jerusalem. And the life that he lived as a prophet, about 50 plus years, most of the time they wanted to kill him. How did Jeremiah's plans work for him? Well, the point is, God has plans for us. And again, there's nothing at all wrong with making plans. I make plans every week. I make plans every day. I've got a day planner. A lot of times I'll plan out the first half of the week and I leave the second half open because I know there are so many things that come up there in the first part. I'm not going to get all of those done and I better leave some room in there. But with our life, so many times when we do that, we crowd God out. Well, I don't have time. Sorry, God. I've got this. I'm doing this. I don't have time. And what does James say? He says we're arrogant. We are arrogant. And it's not necessary to apply these verses through verse 17 to the rich only. James is not just talking to the rich. He's talking to everybody, regardless of wealth, social standing, or any other condition, who make their life plans without respect to the will of God. We should plan, but we must include God in our plans. Again, James is describing a group of Jewish traders sitting, as it were, in front of a map, pointing to the next city. We're going to go here, we're going to go there, we're going to visit this, we're going to make plans, we're going to spend a year there, we're going to buy and sell, and we're going to make a profit. Go now, you that say today or tomorrow, whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Do you know how many people have made plans down? I'm going to do this for the week. I'm going to do this tomorrow. They go to bed thinking I'm going to do this tomorrow, and then they don't wake up in the morning. How many people die before they carry out that plan that they had? And have they been carrying out the plans that God has had for them? So again, it's not that planning is condemned. It is that planning, leaving out God, is condemned. Boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. So who does know what's going to happen tomorrow? Well, God knows. And we need to keep God in our plans and in our prayers. James was not the only one that said that. Paul, he was keenly conscious of the Lord's hand in his affairs, and he would mention frequently Acts 18:21, if God will, 1 Corinthians 4:19, if the Lord will, 1 Corinthians 16:7, if the Lord permits. So we have this phrase, if the Lord wills, Lord willing, I'll be here Wednesday night, Lord willing, I'm going to do this, Lord willing. And we need to make that part of the fabric of our character, and not just how we end a sentence. Not just where it doesn't, we say it so often, it doesn't mean anything. Well, I'm going to do this, Lord willing. Then it just becomes vain. It becomes vain. Those who make plans from which God has been excluded, and who glory in such, do that which is evil. We must ever remember that God is the superintendent of the universe. We are the creatures of his hand, and we should conduct ourselves accordingly. So you stop and think of how arrogant I am. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And I'm like a little puppet down here. And God, the master puppeteer up here, who controls everything, he may have something so much better in mind for me, in mind for you. But we focus on our plans and leave God out of it. For whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? It's even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. The uncertainty of tomorrow was stressed by Jesus, who said of the grass of the field, it today is, and tomorrow is cast in the oven. It's here and it's gone. Both Peter and James stated the spiritual overtones of teaching. Peter saying all flesh is as grass, and an idea that certainly included in what James said. Our life is just like those flowers that we saw come up in the spring. Before you know it, they're going to be gone. They're going to dry up and wither away. Our life is just like a fog, just like a vapor. This is a fog at the ruins of the temple of Apollo at Delphi. You can see the mist there. This is Nimrod's fortress in fog. Looking at the fog, here you see a different site where the fog has vanished away. Different parts of the country, you wake up in the morning, you go out, and everything's just covered with this mist, covered with this fog. And the sun comes up, and before you know it, it's burned off, and you can see everything. James is saying, that's what your life is like. It's short. It's just like that flower. And then you see, again, how arrogant when we become. Our life is short like that flower. Our life is short like that fog, like that mist. And we become arrogant because of all the plans that we are making. And again, it's not wrong to make plans, but we arrogantly make plans and leave God out of our plans. We leave him out, or sometimes if we think of him, we tack him on at the end. If the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. Here James explains the proper attitude, if the Lord wills. Literally, this is saying, if the Lord has so determined it in his wisdom. It's important that our attitude always reflects this idea rather than just saying the words, if the Lord wills. We should not just say it as an idle phrase, as some people do. And again, when we're young, again, nothing at all wrong with having plans. Nothing wrong with having ambition. But when we're young in high school, get out of high school, 18, 20 years, and we make these plans, how often do we include God in our plans? Instead of saying, I want to go to this city. This is the city I want to go to. I want to move to the East Coast. I want to move to the West Coast. I want to move here. I want to do this. I want to do that. And we don't consider God. And God, just like God told Jeremiah, I know the plans that I have for you. He has plans for every one of us. But we are arrogant and boast about our own plans. This verb boast means to take pride in something, often in the negative sense of bragging. This is a statue of Narcissus, a figure of mythology. He was completely self-absorbed. Such behavior fits well with both boasting relating to self and arrogance. This photo was photographed in the Vatican Museum. So the Greeks and Romans had these different gods that they understood. Some of them were just in love with themselves. They were in love with themselves and they would boast and brag about themselves. The word arrogance refers to pretension and thinking highly of oneself. The Roman emperors were known for their arrogance. The emperor who was on the throne at the time when James wrote this letter was Claudius. This is a statue portraying him, showing him very masculine, holding a spear. His body's portrayed like the chiseled body of a model athlete. Arrogance. And do you think if the sculptor didn't make the sculpture just like the emperor wanted him to look, that he would say, that's okay? No, they were arrogant. Arrogant. And we point at those people and say, how can they boast so much? How can they be so arrogant? And yet, we don't think about ourselves boasting and being arrogant. Arrogance, in 1 John 2:16, this phrase indicates that the real problem was that they were actually making it a point to leave out God, almost defying him. They put their trust in their own abilities. All such boasting is evil. I've heard of some businesses, just talking about business for a minute, some businesses that are faith-based that will start the day with prayer. Or I know of some Christians where they work in roles where before the day started, they could have like a 15-minute Bible study if the employees wanted to come. Starting the day off thinking of God, including God in their plans. Back to boasting, it's this word, the original meaning the act of glorying. This word originally referred to a traveling fake doctor who offered cures that were not cures and boasted of things he was not actually able to do. So these fake doctors didn't start on the Western TV sitcoms and movies with their medicine wagon. This goes back to ancient times. And this word means, originally referred to a traveling fake doctor. He's boasting. Here's my tonic. It'll cure whatever ails you. It'll fix you right up. Therefore, to him that knows to do good and does it not, to him it is sin. There are sins of omission as well as commission. Again, we refer to Christ's parable in Luke 10. It's a vivid example of the sin of omission, for the priest and the Levite omit their duty to their fellow man, while the Good Samaritan was a loving neighbor to the injured stranger. So when we're judging people, this person is worthy of help, this one isn't, this one is doing something right, this one's doing something wrong, and then just the making plans without God, the arrogance of people. God has taught us what is right, and if we fail to do it, it is sin. The danger is that we agree to the truth about the brevity of life and the uncertainty of future. We say, oh yeah, I understand that. I understand my life is just like that flower. I understand my life is just like that mist. But then we go on living as we did before with our far-reaching plans and without any reference to the will of God. So when I get up in the morning, am I going to start thinking of what am I going to do for the next 10, 20, 30 years? And be boastful and arrogant? Or am I going to start and think, what can I accomplish today? And see, that's the other thing. When we're talking about the future, we're putting off doing today what we need to do. Such an attitude is the very essence of sin. Sin is not only doing evil, but failing to do the good we know to do. So when we read those lists of sins in the letter that Paul wrote to the Corinthians, the works of the flesh in the book of Galatians, the list of sins in the book of Romans, and we say, how can those people do that? How could they do that? Well, friends, we are just as bad if we know to do good and we do not do it. A few thoughts from James on judging and arrogance. Friends, if there's anyone here this evening that has sin in your life, you're struggling with something, you need prayers, you have sin that you need to confess, you need to respond to the gospel invitation in some way, we invite you to come forward now as we stand and sing.